A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 376. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Psychoville. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're looking at a BBC Two serial that ran from 2009 to 2011. It ran for 2 seasons, 7 episodes of 30 minutes in the first season. Then there was a 45-minute Halloween special, and then it came back for a second season of 6 more 30-minute episodes. And as we said last time, Brian, multiple characters, dark humour, horror, very horror-inflected, and it comes from 2 members of the League of Gentlemen comedy troupe.
Yes, absolutely. So this really is rotating around the comedy. So for the Halloween special, it gave them the chance to do something a little bit different. So they made something that was like a portmanteau horror film, where they looked at several different storylines as little self-contained pieces that were drawn together into this one show, with characters from Psychoville caught up in some classic ghost story or monster tropes that were separate from what they did in the first series and the second series. So it was very much loosely the same characters, but a separate piece that was not in continuity with anything else. The League of Gentlemen are well known for their love and their fandom for Amicus and Tygon and Hammer horror films. And I think maybe the Amicus portmanteau films had sort of an influence on this one here.
It's very much like an Amicus portmanteau horror. And yes, they do love all that stuff. And they often now, because they've become so well known and successful, you will find them cropping up on new DVD and Blu-ray releases of some of those films, doing commentaries or interviews or features about that particular brand of horror. So yes, certainly something that they love. And here, as you say, Brian, getting to do, possibly to do a better tribute to those films than when we talked about Dr. Terrible's House of Horrors, although clearly the creators of that show have the same admiration for the source material, I guess.
Yes, Dr. Terrible's House of Horrible was a little bit more anthology and less portmanteau, because they were doing a series there. But yeah, there is something similar in what they were doing there.
And then, of course, after the Halloween special, they return for season 2, and we start to get, I think, a lot more of the plot, although it is quite complicated and involved. But there seems to be something to do with what happens to the main characters when they were all patients at the now abandoned Ravenhill Hospital. We learned a little bit more about them as series 1 progressed, and in series 2 we get to know a bit more about Ravenhill, a bit more about what happened there, and a bit more about one of the characters from that hospital.
Yes, it definitely continues on from series 1. It isn't related to that Halloween special. And we have their treatment at the hands of Nurse Ketchington, played by Eileen Atkins. So this sort of fearsome and terrifying nurse treating the patients badly becomes sort of a part of all of these different characters' history. So it's what sort of draws all of these pieces together. And the plot also starts to focus on this mysterious locket, which everyone seems to be chasing.
The MacGuffin, I guess, of season two.
Yeah, that's right. And it introduces some new characters with Jason Watkins as the owner of a collectibles toy shop called Hoity Toities. And Imelda Staunton comes in as the director of a mysterious espionage type organization. She's clearly modeled on Judi Dench as M and makes an actual name reference when she's introduced. So that was sort of a fun extra piece to have in there.
It certainly is, and she's so much influenced by Judi Dench's version of M in the Bond films that she is almost literally obsessed with her character, so much so that she seems at times to forget in her organization's interest in the locket and actually more interested in getting the audiovisual aids in her office. She wants a high-tech desk and a display screen and various bits and pieces that she can control by hand gestures. It's not quite the high-tech that Judi Dench has, and she aspires to it.
Yes, very much so.
And I just mentioned that, you know, we get some nice turns by Imelda Staunton doing that. As you say, Jason Watkins is always watchable, anything he's on in television. Eileen Atkins, you know, considerable actress turning up as the sort of villainess of the piece. One of the things they've always been able to do, Brian, I think since the success of The League of Gentlemen, is that they've been able to attract incredible actors to work with them, and that's something that's continued beyond Psychobilly into Inside Number 9, where the cast on that is just spectacular.
Right, of course. And The League of Gentlemen was known for having some extreme characters who have become more controversial as time has passed. And Shearsmith and Pemberton continued that theme and those ideas into Psychobilly. So you have lots of exaggerated characters for humorous purposes, and it does feel sort of like there's some quote-unquote punching down happening, and the humor gets to be maybe a little bit nasty or even cruel. So I think perhaps tastes have changed somewhat, or it is something that some people gravitate more to than I do, perhaps.
Well, this is an interesting problem as we discuss the comedy of grotesques. As you say, Brian, clearly something that The League of Gentlemen was well known for. Now, interestingly, as time has passed, you know, over 20 years since the start of The League of Gentlemen, some of the characters have become much more controversial. Particularly, for instance, the character of the transgender woman who drives the taxi in Royston Vasey, who was very much seen as a figure of fun in the original series, although recently in the specials they tried to redress some of that by making her a more inspirational figure. But I think the same problem can be seen to be happening now at Psychobilly, that some of the stuff they were doing, some of their targets, it does seem a bit like punching down. And, you know, particularly as we said, the depiction of people who've all suffered from mental health problems may be a bit unfortunate. The depiction of a young man who's clearly got behavioural and, you know, he's quite deeply disturbed seems a bit strange. Their treatment of the actors who are all affected by dwarfism is quite... That's played for laughs, I think, Brian, isn't it? And it does seem this comedy is treading a very, you know, fine line between bordering into complete cruelty itself.
Yeah, it's been 10 years since this came out, and attitudes towards mental health issues and the portrayal of mental health issues in drama and television, that's changed quite a bit in that time. And when it comes to disabilities and to dwarfism, those attitudes have changed too. And when I first started watching, in the first couple of episodes, I was pleased that they were showing people with dwarfism and showing them as adults with very adult lives and concerns and all of that, and the things that they were dealing with. But unfortunately, as it went on, it wasn't just them suffering with, you know, being taunted. It was more like the show itself not viewing them well, and that was unfortunate.
And I noted, you know, before we started recording, Brian, that this might be a transition point between the real extreme characters in the League of Gentlemen, what's happening in Psychoville, and then going on to what I regard as a much more successful series, one that I'm a big fan of, Inside Number 9, where thankfully they seem to have lost the, you know, maybe time will tell, maybe in 10 years' time some of it will now seem a bit dodgy, but, you know, they seem to have lost that cruelty. They seem to have far more interest in their characters that they're portraying in Inside Number 9 episodes.
Yeah, so it maybe shows some progress in society, or at least shows how attitudes and approaches to these things have changed over time.
Now, the other thing that might have changed is our approach to comedy and the shows we cover, Brian. Because it does seem to me that whenever we do this, we seem to have a discussion about what makes good comedy and also about how hard it is to do it and to get it right. We always talk about Red Dwarf and The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Of course, in science fiction comedy over the years, we've talked about some less successful attempts. For horror comedy, I guess Dr. Terrible we've talked about wasn't terribly successful. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, I know we've done as well. This one, again, it's sort of like that very dark humour that they're going for with these grotesques. I guess, you know, it's just, again and again, it's just a hard thing to do, isn't it, Brian?
I think so. And comedy is always something that is quite individual. It tends to either work very well for someone or work not at all for someone, in a lot of cases. And yeah, some of these things that we've covered, having dark humor there is fine, but they sometimes tend to have the problems that they are trying to comment on when they're, you know, referencing earlier shows. And that's something that I think is very difficult to do, you know, to comment on poor coverage in older shows without doing it yourself. And some of it, unfortunately, can gravitate towards nastiness in humor, which is something that I personally don't gravitate towards.
No, it is. I mean, it's a tricky subject. I mean, we should perhaps say that neither of us have a lot of experience or particular fans of the League of Gentlemen original series, so we're perhaps not the best people to commentate. But we have watched all of Psychoville. I've watched all of Inside Number 9. I'm much more comfortable with Inside Number 9. We'll talk a bit more about Psychoville in a moment. But yeah, it is a tricky subject, getting horror comedy right and still making it funny.
Yes, it really is. So I think we should turn to some of our own thoughts more than we already have. Eamon, what did you like about Psychoville?
I think the best thing it's got going for it is its cast. You know, they do have the ability to attract a great cast, some of whom are just sensational to watch on screen. So people like Daniel Kaluuya, before he goes on to, you know, film stardom and Oscars. Jason Watkins is great. I mentioned Imelda Staunton, which I was a big fan of. Her character's obsession with Judi Dench's version of M and, you know, wanting everything to work high tech. I thought that was great stuff. Plus, I like Shearsmith and Pemberton as actors themselves, even though I sometimes like them when they rein it in rather than go for the extremes. some of their more contained characters within this show seem more interesting. Joy Aston's husband is played by Steve Pemberton. There's a librarian character who turns up in the second season, played by Rhys Shearsmith, who is always teetering on the edge of some sort of terrible breakdown, it seems, but, you know, just barely holding things together. And I found that much more interesting. So I liked the acting performances in this. What about yourself?
Yeah, as a variation on that, I'll say that there were a number of sort of smaller characters and smaller bits of things that were quite enjoyable. And they're basically the ones that you've mentioned. The librarian was entertaining. Imelda Staunton's character and those sequences, that was great. That was some of the most enjoyable stuff in here. And Daniel Kaluuya was very good, and I liked some of the two-hander stuff that he had with the Oscar Lomax character. I think Kaluuya's presence sometimes brought that performance of the elderly blind character up to something that was more interesting. So there were some sort of bits and pieces of those that were pretty good. I also liked how ambitious the show was, that they had so many characters and they had people spread out in a variety of different places. They were sort of painting on a big canvas, so to speak. And that was something that I liked and I was sort of pleased to see.
That is interesting, yes. I mean, they do, as you say, they aim high, don't they? They aim big, multiple characters, multiple locations, and then trying to tie it all into the one story. So yes, that is interesting. You mentioned Daniel Kaluuya and the Oscar Lomax character. There's a reveal about the Oscar Lomax character in the second season, which I'm not going to spoil, but it did leave me somewhat puzzled about that character. There's an interesting development, which I thought was an unusual one. But again, maybe that's them aiming high.
Yes, that was a strange one, wasn't it? I do like this format that we see in various things of having a number of central characters and each one of those surrounded by a group of characters. So you end up with lots of characters in sort of different groupings.
And of course, it's a BBC show, so I guess, you know, we could take it for granted that it's going to look good, sound good, production values are pretty good, even though they had to obviously hit the budget by doing that bottle episode in season one. You know, the look and the feel of it, the direction and so on is all pretty good, isn't it, Brian?
I think so, yeah. And as you mentioned, that bottle episode, I like that more than most of the others. I thought Mark Gatiss coming in for an episode sort of infused something a little more interesting. And it was one of the few times that I enjoyed those two murder-obsessed characters a little bit more when they were playing off of Mark Gatiss and his role.
Yes, that is a good episode, actually, and works very well as the parody of Rope. It even, I think, it starts almost exactly the same way as the film starts, doesn't it? And, you know, and getting the two characters just in one location, what seems to be one continuous take, bringing in Mark Gatiss as a third character. Yeah, that one works really well. I did like that. And again, it's interesting, these stories from production, sometimes when perhaps the limitation of a budget has to force them to do something creative, and the results are quite interesting. So yeah, I like that. It was a good one. Was there anything else that you had in the pluses column before we move to some minuses, Brian?
I think we should move to some of the more negative things.
Oh dear, right. Our listeners can probably tell. How are you going to start us off?
Well, for me, a lot of this was just not very fun. And I know this is very much a personal thing, And I did enjoy, you know, some of the things with Imelda Staunton and a few things here and there. But most of it, the things that were intended to be funny came across as a little bit sad and misplaced, or as just sort of being nasty to those characters, and perhaps even to, you know, people who are in those situations.
Yes, I think that is my biggest problem with it, that it does seem, you know, to be charitable, it does seem unkind about some of its characters and their various problems. And that was my, you know, my biggest problem, I think, that it is when the grotesques get exaggerated to the point of cruelty, and it does seem to be punching down at times to, you know, some of the people and some of the characters. That was my trouble. But as I say, I wasn't a particular fan of the League of Gentlemen, even though my tastes in horror and so on overlaps with them so much. But maybe I wasn't quite the right audience for Psychoville either, although I'm a huge fan of Inside Number 9. I really think that is splendid, something that we can't really cover because it's still ongoing and is likely to continue to be renewed. It's a tricky one. The humour of this one missed me as well, often.
Yeah, I feel that in a lot of ways it just didn't work very well. You know, obviously it worked well enough for them to do a second series and for them to do that Halloween special. So obviously this was liked and it got a few awards, as we've mentioned. But for me, I just didn't feel that it worked. And I feel that the sort of nasty approach that it has and the nastiness of the humor are kind of problematic.
And possibly we are outliers on the subject of the League of Gentlemen. I mean, you haven't seen, I think, any of it at all, have you, Brian?
I have not looked at the League of Gentlemen. I'm certainly aware of it and aware of those actors, but I haven't actually watched the series.
Whereas I've seen some of it, not all of it, but I wasn't a particular fan. Slightly more interested in Psychoville, big, as I say, much more interested inside Number 9. But maybe, you know, somebody needs to get in touch with us and tell us a little bit more about why we're wrong about Psychoville. And maybe also we're waiting for that comedy horror series to come along and knock our socks off. And again, this doesn't necessarily seem to have been the one, I'm afraid.
No, it really isn't. So should we move on to our recommendations?
I think we should. Perhaps you should start us off, Brian.
Okay, well, it's quite a simple no from me. I'm not going to recommend this. It is not a series that I enjoyed. I think if you are fans of these actors and the team from The League of Gentlemen, then you've probably already seen this at this point. So, yeah, for me, no, I'm not going to recommend this.
Yes, fans of The League of Gentlemen will have seen this already. If you're a fan of Inside Number 9, I would recommend trying to watch Series 1, Episode 4, the Rope episode. That's a good one. I'd also recommend the Portmanteau Horror of the Halloween special. But as a whole, for the Psychoville series, I'm going to say it's a no from me as well. Go and watch Inside Number 9, which I think all the series are available on BBC iPlayer and Netflix over here in the UK. So go and watch those, is my suggestion. But as ever, if you think we've got it wrong on Psychoville, do drop by the Facebook group and let us know.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, Psychoville introduced us to a wide variety of different characters who are all struggling in different ways, and each character tends to have a group of supporting characters around them, and we see characters being sent these "I know what you did" letters and becoming concerned about people who may know their secrets. And we get into some of these horror ideas of who may be behind this and what could be going on. And we gradually learn about this now abandoned mental health hospital where many of these characters had been patients. And we lead towards learning about these strange things that happened in the past.
Interesting stuff. Let us know what you thought about the, let's say, oddball characters of Psychoville by coming to the Facebook group.
Absolutely.
And please come and join us next time when we're going for our yearly look at one of the works of Gerry Anderson and his crew. And we're going very early this time, Brian, back to 1959 for Torchy the Battery Boy. And we've got some interesting things to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. That will be a very different one to talk about, for sure. Until then, you can find all of our episodes, including some of the things we've mentioned, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on some of the discussions. And also find out what a few of our upcoming topics will be.
That's where to find out what shows we'll be covering next. And do come and join us on the Voice of Geeks Network, where you'll find other shows, podcasts, gaming, Twitch streaming, and so on at vognetwork.com for the Voice of Geeks.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada signing off.
Thank you very much. It's Eamon from England also signing off.